Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Penny Lane Podcast. In today's episode, we're joined by Snack the Ask. He shares his story of how he found trading and the persistence required in order to find success scalping penny stocks. Thank you to our sponsor, Last Bottle Wines, for supporting the show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review if you enjoy.
Hello, Snacks. Welcome to the Penny Lane Podcast, finally.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for coming on. I feel like this has been a year in the making. How long has it been?
It's been a little while.
It's been a minute.
A few months, maybe.
I've been trying to do this thing on the podcast. I don't know if you wouldn't have heard because it's all in episodes that are about to come out. But I've been opening it by saying, I haven't seen you in a month of Sundays. And I feel like it's applicable here by saying, it's been a month of Sundays since we've been trying to get you on the podcast.
I can't. There's so many episodes that I'm trying to keep up.
There's so many episodes. We might be about to cut back some. It's a lot of episodes.
It's a lot. I respect the hustle, though. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hustle. We're doing two a week now. We've been doing two a week forever. But
I listened to another show called This Week in Startups, and they have one every day but Saturday. So like,
oh, that's too much.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Our first producer told me that I ask too much of our listeners, that I like ask for too much of their time for 2 hours a week. And like, he's probably not wrong, but whatever. We're here now, you know?
Yeah, here we are.
All right. How old are you?
I'm old. I'm 31.
Okay.
It's almost over.
Shark and I are also in our 30s.
Okay, here we are.
Here we are, a bunch of 30-year-olds. So you when did you start trading? In 2020 or before?
I started during the whole COVID mania with no idea what I was doing. I forgot how I even started. I think people were just bored at home, and it was probably like Robinhood. I think somebody sent me a thing and I got on it and proceeded to then load my account with a portion of a student loan and throw it at the first stock I saw.
I love this. Okay, like a student loan check? Are you a student?
So I was going to school and it was COVID. So I don't remember if I was working then. But I had like, I think I had like an extra $3,000-$4,000 in the bank. So I threw it into my Robinhood account. And then I think I randomly saw a headline for a stock called INO, Inovio. It was a COVID vaccine. And I like put all the money in this stock. And then I just sat on it and I got it perfectly where then in like a few days I was up like, I think I was up like $5,000 in like a few days. And I was like, this is life changing. This is crazy. And I was like, oh, if I just keep holding, like, what if I'm up $20,000? With like no idea what I was doing at all. I had no idea what I was doing. So then I think it was Citron. I think they did a short report on this company because they're like a typical bullshit company. Every time there's like a new health crisis, they're like, oh, look at us, just like people are doing now with monkeypox, right?
Yeah.
So, but I was like, I was a noob, so I had no idea, right? So I didn't take my profit. So then they do this short report. The stock falls from like 19 to like 10 or whatever. And then, so I panic. I think I sold and made like, I think I made like $900 or $1,000, like $1,000. And then it keeps falling. And then, so then I bought back in all just wrong, like then getting FOMO.
Yeah.
I ended up losing all the money I made and like $1,000.
Oh, man.
So that was my first introduction to the stock market.
You learned so many lessons right there just in that one trade, you know?
Yeah.
You already covered like three of the biggest things, you know?
Yeah, still didn't learn enough. obviously I still made mistakes, but that was like my introduction to the market.
You know, I'm so jealous when we have traders on and they're like, oh, in like 2020, I just sort of threw money at anything. And I was up thousands and thousands. I never made money. Like, I was so bad that even in 2020, I mean, there would be days where I'd make like $1,000 or something and then I'd lose it. I mean, I like never was up like, oh my God, this is incredible. So, I'm jealous of that, but I think I had a lot to learn.
Yeah. I mean, I ended up losing that year. That was my first year. And I think I ended down like $3,000-$4,000 on the year. I just couldn't, like, it was like the hottest year for so many people. And I just didn't know what I was doing. I got in some random Discord and, I was just trying to do so many different things. I didn't have a lot of money, so I couldn't really like trade too well. And I just was all over the place trying a million different things. So that was my first year. It was kind of a mess.
So what Discord were you in?
Oh my God. What was it? Let me look right now. I can't remember the original name of it. And I can't remember the original name of it. And then it like became a new one called Golden Goose.
yeah, okay.
That was the name of it, and it was like I had to pay like $7, I think.
Oh, and wow.
I think I found it off Weeble.
These golden
goose the Weeble
people.
Comments?
Yeah, I was in the Weeble comments.
This $7 a month. These people are making money in the stocks, and I like that. Somehow you made your way from Robinhood to Weeble to the comments to Twitter to Discord. Is that?
Yeah, I don't remember how. It's weird to think about like the progression. Like I think somebody had a Twitter in that first Discord or on Weeble. And then I looked at it and that probably prompted me to make a Twitter because I'd never had a Twitter. And I don't even remember how I found MTA. Like, I have no idea.
Oh, really?
I don't know what prompted me to get into MTA, but somehow I ended up in MTA. Well, right? I even looked at Atlas once, but it was, like, too crazy. Like, the chat was moving so fast, where I was like, this is ridiculous for me.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
MTA is a good, you know, it's got a lot of great traders in there.
Oh,
definitely
I like it.
Definitely a good spot to, you know, try to get your feet wet.
Definitely.
Know.
So what did you like initially about MTA? Was it me?
It was you. It was only you. I hate anything else. I don't like anything else. You're not even really in there, though.
All roads lead back to Penny.
She's not really there, though, like. To be honest.
Well, to be honest, I'm not really anywhere. It's
probably
not.
Good.
I'm a. I don't know. Were you in MTA when I had to take that like vow of silence? I had to get off Discord and Twitter for a week. Do you remember that?
I'm trying to remember.
It doesn't matter if you remember or not. But
I don't think so.
Yeah, I had just learned how to trade on Thinkorswim, and I like was trying at AC Texas Hammer taught me how to trade on Thinkorswim, and I don't know if you'd mind me sharing this or not. It's true. So he accused me. I made a very good trade, and he accused me of copying somebody else's trade. I got so mad.
How dare
at him.
You?
That I was like, I didn't do that. And he was like, well, I mean, he made me believe that he didn't believe that I could have like possibly made the trade on my own. And I was like, well, F you, like I'll do it on my own. And so I got off Twitter. I got off Discord for a week. And I mean, to be fair, it was my best week in trading. It was an amazing week.
When was that?
I didn't have any anxiety.
That was like a while ago.
Yeah, it was last year. Probably about a year ago. Yeah.
Wow. Time flies.
It was in the early days of MTA. Well, maybe it was like last September. That seems about right. But so I took the week off of MTA, and sort of in that time, I got pretty accustomed to just hanging out on my own. But it's funny because I do have access to a lot of rooms, and I have like roles in a lot of rooms, but I've gotten to the point now where I'm really just training by myself. So I'll sort of just like drop into rooms to kind of screw around a little bit in the middle of the day. And people are like, what are you doing? Like, they're all in there, like actively working on trading and being serious. And I'm like, what's up, assholes? And they're like, can you leave? Oh my God. Like, you're not.
I mean, I get it. I get it. I kind of do that in MTA. Like, they've now given me kind of like a little mod role or whatever.
And oh,
I
have congratulations. Like a little,
thank you. And I have like a little room where I put my strategy or whatever you call it, which I need to update. But I kind of do my own thing. Like, there's people on Voice and they take like the runner of the day. And like, I don't really take any of them ever. Like, I think I took Saidu briefly yesterday. And I got it perfectly at 191. But then I, like, saw something I didn't like, and I, like, sold it, and then it ran. I was like, son of a bitch. But but it's all good. I sell quick anyway. It's something to work on. Consistently makes me money anyway. But I normally do my own thing in there. You know what I mean? I would say I almost trade by myself every day.
Yeah. It's almost kind of like a superpower, kind of, to be like, or it made me feel powerful to be like, I am a lone wolf out here. Like, I'm just, you know. But I do go back and forth. Like, I have spent a ton of time in Shark's room. And there was a long stretch when I was in there every day, all day, and on weekends, just, like, messing around. I was, you know, did a huge stint in MTA.
Yeah.
But the end of the day, trading is a very lonely, self-reliant thing, I feel like. And sometimes I got to just remind myself that it's just on me. Who's an MTA voice these days? Berkey still holding it down?
Berkey, Stryker.
Oh, my favorite. Stryker's like my favorite person on FinTwit.
Really?
I just love him so much. Yeah.
You know, Trade and Fade.
Trade and Fade.
Callum's not really on there
that
much.
That's a good name. Trade and Fade.
Trade and Fade.
He's Justin. Coming on soon. Justin's coming on next week.
Yeah, Justin's good people. Me and him talk a lot. Just like, we'll go over our trades and stuff. Not every day, but he's one of those people. Eslo sometimes, not as much. I mean, making sales. Perch is on there a lot, actually. He's kind of all over, but he's there quite a bit.
You know, what I've been meaning to say, and I actually was going to go into MTA and, like, write up a little sentimental thing. But I'll say it now. I might still write a sentimental thing. But it's just so wild to me that we just hit our 1 year. So a year ago, or just over a year ago, when MTA started, I felt like we were all very, like, ragtag. Like, we liked Brad. We liked his ethos. I liked the way he traded. I loved momentum trading. I still like momentum trading. It's, like, the best. But I feel like we were kind of like the garbage pail kids or whatever, because a lot of us were sort of rejects from Atlas. And
yeah.
Watching that room grow, now I'm not in it day in and day out, but like, I still keep a pulse on what's going on, and I follow all my good friends from MTA on Twitter, and it feels like the MTA core group is like the cream kind of rising to the top in this particular market. And I don't know if that is because I'm so partial to you guys and love you guys and feel like we have this connection, or if like there is something so magical in MTA that you guys are the ones thriving. And in either way, it is worth celebrating and like so incredible. Yeah. And such a huge I'm so proud of all of the whole MTA community. I'm so proud of Brad. I'm so proud of like Callum and Berkey and Stryker and the people in making sales, the people in their day and AC, of course. But it's just such a testament to like showing up and studying and doing the right thing and being self-reliant. I'm so proud to have been like such an early member there and where it is now. I've got to write something up because I really do feel that way.
I like MTA because there's so many different styles. There's so many different traders, but people are pretty self-efficient. People do their own thing for the most part. There's a lot of things I just don't see anywhere else, like Broda or I can't even explain it. There's so much there that it's almost overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah. God, Broda is just such a sage of wisdom. I had some spy putts that I bought yesterday and
I saw those. Good luck. I mean, not good job.
Thanks. It was a great, I'm like so proud of that play because it was, I did a podcast earlier today with a sound trading psychology who does trading psychology. And we were talking about me, how invested I've been in finding my own strategy. And like these puts, it was very much my own strategy. I didn't look on Twitter. I didn't look on Discord. It was my very, very own play. And I woke up this morning and looked at SPY and I didn't know where my puts were, but I was like, I think
this is nice.
So I like get on, I'm like, Broda, and I ask him if he could help me set a trailing stop loss. Like 2 years in, I don't know how to do it. Broda, can you help me? And
I think we learn every day though.
It's okay. Yeah. Broda was like, first of all, he was like, Blaine, that, you know, so great. I'm so proud of you, whatever. And then he also sent me some Wyckoff stuff. It's hard for me to understand, but basically it said, there's a good chance that this is about as low as we go for a while. And we've got this on Friday. We got this on Monday. Like if I were you, I'd get out a good amount at the open, which I did. Like, totally took his advice on that. But anyway, thanks to MTA for letting me know Broda and the I don't know what a Wyckoff is, but if I need to know, you know.
It's all mad.
Yeah, that's over my head. So
I was going to ask Snack. So you said you moved to Webull. Is that what you're primarily trading on right now?
No, I use.
On desktop?
I use TradeStation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I used to use Thinkorswim, but I have such a high amount of orders and volume that they wanted to start charging me about $2 per trade if I didn't bring down the orders. And I try to bring down the orders, and I don't know, just how I am. I didn't do it, and then I just ended up trying TradeStation, and I like TradeStation. I may eventually mess with Thinkorswim again, but for now it's perfect.
No, yeah, it makes sense. You don't want to be paying $2, you know, for any of that. So as a scalper, how long would you say your like typical plays go? Anywhere from what, a minute to 5 minutes, or what's kind of the range?
20 seconds to a minute or two. It depends. You know, I've been doing more shorting lately, so some of those I have to be a little bit more patient, but I like to get that kind of like explosive move, almost like momentum trading, but fairly quick. I've for the most part, I've been trading penny stocks heavily for the past few months. I mean, I've been trading them for over a year, you know, and I kept kind of running into a wall. Like I blew up twice, and you know, the last time I blew up, I just was like, I need to change something. This, I'm at like the end of like, I'm either going to make it or be like,
right. Yeah.
Fucked, you know? Yeah. So I just focused on what I know, and it's been very, very positive.
So
now,
why
how are you doing?
You
oh, go ahead, sorry.
Walk us down what it is that you know and like what it is that you're doing.
So people like sometimes they make fun of me, but it's hilarious how I figured this out. So I was trading. It all started with Sundial out of all stocks, like the it's like the
good old
shittiest
Zach Morris.
It's like the shittiest company ever, right? I don't care about them long term, but it's almost like how the stock is set up. I think because there's so many shares, it's like a 2 billion float. I think I primarily trade penny stocks that have the four decimal, like the 0.0000, and that's it. Because I've realized it's so easy to get in and out with size that I can control my risk very well. And I use a trading ladder, use. And primarily, I just look for psych levels and I just watch level two or the ladder, the matrix, whatever you call it. And I watch SPY. And I've realized after doing this for about a year that so many of these penny stocks move very almost in tandem with SPY. Sundial is almost exact. Like sometimes it'll disconnect, but it's like, and sometimes it lags, but it's so close that like if I'm like, okay, I see a bid on the level two at like, you know, 52 cents. It's lower now, but as an example, right? And the bid is like, I don't know, 300K or 100K. And then the ask is on the same level two, right? And it's like right above it. So it's like, so instead of 0.5200, it's like 0.5203 or five or whatever. It's right there. Well, I know if I hit the ask, I can just sell into the bid if it goes against me and I lose almost nothing, right?
Right. Yeah, that liquidity waiting.
And I do that, and I've been doing that with size, right? So I'll do that with 10 to 50K shares. And now I have been doing it with more size than that, you know? And I just do it with SPY and it reacts very well. It's almost like it, like the stock lurches forward right when SPY is getting that MOMO. And some of these penny stocks, it's almost like you can trigger the algos. So if you hit them almost at the right time with SPY moving and you hit them with the right amount of size, you can kind of get them to get, it's almost like you trigger the algos to start sending volume into the stock at the same time. They're all different, but that's all I've been trading. And it's very interesting, but I've been doing very well doing it for a while.
That's really interesting
because you normally think of, you know, at least for me, when I, you know, and I still trade pennies every once in a while, but sometimes like if SPY is choppy, I'll try to go trade pennies because sometimes when they have the PR, if it's the main runner of the day, there's actually a disconnect, you know,
yeah.
But that's interesting that you're finding some relationship there. And I mean, you know, obviously technically, like, you know, supposedly, you know, the market's going up then everything should have at least some strength behind it. It's going,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's all connected, but that's interesting.
Yeah. Like yesterday for FOMC, I was watching SPY, right. And Sundial, and there's other ones I play, but I play that one probably the most. And, so I like, it ran up and then I think I took a short, probably at a psych level. I mean, I can see when the ask starts getting thick, right? And I can just kind of time it with SPY, or I might be looking at time and sales and just different things. I can't even explain it all the time. It's just like, it just happens, right? I just see it. It's like fluid at this point, right? Or organic. And I like,
so
took
you
a
say,
short... go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh no.
So
then I like, I'll take
two is,
yeah, level
is
two.
Important in your trading. You
that's
use
all
it a lot
I,
for you.
That's all I use, right? I don't even really, I don't chart any of these stocks ever. I don't need to because I'm just looking at the minute chart. I don't draw on it on them. I don't. It, to me, it doesn't matter if the stock's at 70 cents or 30 cents. I'm not gonna hold it for a whole move anyway. I'm gonna be taking multiple moves while it's making a big move. If that makes sense. And I might be shorting. I might be shorting it at the same time.
How? What's the what's the float on SNDL, and how many shares are traded per day?
I don't really know how many.
Is that a legitimate question or no? Yeah.
I'm gonna like open.
I want to know the answer, but I don't know if I asked that question.
No, that's good. I'm actually gonna open my broker right now. I know it's like $2 billion. It's a lot.
Okay,
so it is. It's a heavy float.
It's a heavy float. Yeah. Okay.
No, it's heavy.
But like, no, how many people could possibly be trading SNDL? Like, isn't that just a vehicle?
I mean, I'll put up a million shares of volume in a day sometimes on it.
Well, the average daily volume, I'm looking at it here, is 101 million. Oh, so over 101 million.
So I'm only like a percent of that, or even a little less than a percent.
So
of
you're
that,
1% every day of the people who trade SNDL. So,
and the volume's like 65 million, at least today, supposedly.
So I'm over.
I mean, so that's a lot. I mean, it's obviously so it's 23 cents. Yeah. It's 30 cents, you know, stock. So I mean, there's a lot of shares that are going to be traded, you know.
But like, how? I mean, should you have an SNDL favorite stock meetup somewhere and just like see who you're like?
I don't know.
You think there's other people out there like you?
I mean, maybe. I don't care. The thing is, like, I remember I've tagged the ticker on Twitter or whatever, and somebody's like, "Oh yeah, this is gonna run." Blah 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 blah. Like, I did that with CEI. I've scalped CEI pretty well too, right? Short and long. And somebody was like, "Oh, wait for the 10K. Wait for the 10K CEI." I'm like, I don't give a shit about this company. I'm just using it as a trading vehicle.
Yeah. What's CEI? What's the price of CEI right now?
It's like 50 or 50 cents. It's a 50 something, I think.
God, I back in
40,
my days,
46.
Yeah. I like had sworn off Zach Morris stocks, and then I think I traded it from like 90 cents to a dollar, I think is right. I'm not positive, but I just kept like slapping 1,000 shares, and it was like no money. I just like, and then eventually I was in so heavy, so many thousands of shares. I was like, what am I doing? Like, yeah. So many thousands of shares of this. It really freaked me out.
See, there's differences between all these stocks, though. They're all like their own personalities. Because you look at Sundial, the float's so thick, right? So the spread it's so easy to get into the stock, right? And get out with almost no loss or minimal loss if you know what you're doing. Where if you have CEI, the stock can drop a cent or two in a second if you're not careful. Like, I don't even use stops anymore because I had a stop and it filled me like a cent below. And with 10K shares, it's a $100 loss instantly, right? But Sundial, it's not, there's always like people on the, or whatever, I think they're algos on the level two, right? Between, you know, psych levels in a sense. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
No, it is sort of speaking to me because that's, I don't use level two, but when I actually got asked on all these podcasts when I was doing that Apple thing, and people would ask me to explain how I was trading Apple, and I was like, well, it's so closely tied with SPY, and if you like really, really follow it, you can exploit these inefficiencies between Apple and SPY. And like, I got so deep into like, this is all I trade. You know what I mean? Like, so I understand how you're so deep into it and it's working, but it's kind of like, you're so in that world, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think
you can't do this with every other stock. Like, there'll be stocks that are running and they're a penny stock and they don't have the 0.000, right? They just have 0.00 instead of 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that edge at all. If I was on Thinkorswim, I think all penny stocks are like that. But on TradeStation, there's only like 80 stocks like that. So at some point, I may even move a little bit of money back to Thinkorswim and just stay under that that total amount I can trade, because they said if I had under 390 orders a day, then they wouldn't add a charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
wow, 390 orders. That's
I mean, it's a lot, but it's like I the way I scale. So if I get into one trade, the one trade may take 20 orders, because I usually don't hit 50K shares ever.
Right.
I hit like 10K, 10K, 10K. 10. Mm-hmm. I might even get out.
Do you have hot keys for that?
No, I honestly have like a really nice keyboard that has all that and a mouse, but I just hit the level two.
Oh.
I just hit the, or the matrix rather. I just
got it.
Click it. Yeah. Got it. And I have a lot of scratch trades. So it's like, if something looks like it's going to go against, I'm out. I don't even, I'm just out. If SPY is like doing like something that I don't like, because I use it so much for pennies, I'm out. Right. If I see something on like the level two, or on, if I see like a little bit more selling or whatever, or buying when I'm shorting on time and sales, I'm out. I'll just get back in if I need to get back in, you know? And that's, for me, that's how I control risk. Like, I have very little loss. I mean, some, it happens. You're going to lose. But for the most part, I'm green quite often.
So how, what's a typical loss like for you in like dollar amounts?
I mean, today I had two losses that were $100, but they were probably because I tried something a few times and just got frustrated. You know what I mean? And then finally, I was like, I'm done trying that. Usually, no more than $100 or $200. I try to have it even less than that. I think yesterday I was trying to short something and got squeezed with like 20,000 shares into a new high of day on a penny. It was great. So I lost like $200, right? And it's what it is. I got out. I took it on the chin. But it doesn't happen often. But even my wins aren't that big. You know what I mean? I have maybe, you know, $50 to $100 on my wins. But I just have so many of them that it just, they just keep stacking up and up and up.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like, I call it like algo scalping, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely more like a computer going that fast, definitely. So how did you deal, because penny stocks recently have been heating up again. I've noticed there have been some nice runners. How did you deal with that kind of lull period? I mean, were you still just doing your own thing and the bread and butter with the stocks that you like? Or I guess because you don't really play the main runner of the day, right? You kind of just trade your own.
Yeah, I have.
Really bother you?
No, yeah, I have a list. I have a list of stocks and I just look at the top 10. Usually, whatever has the highest volume, I just trade those, because I feel like when I do my own thing, I do the best, right? You know, on the worst days, I mean, I figured out how to make money. Today, I made, you know, over $1,500 just scalping trash.
Yeah.
I know how to do it. I mean, eventually, I want to get better at playing other stuff. Right now, I've been practicing playing SPY, because I watch SPY all day. Like, that's my main indicator, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to figure out a system of playing SPY. But just slowly. I'm not in a rush.
Yeah.
But, you know, just with, like, 50 shares, trying to figure out, like, a system of, like, right now I'm probably going to, I'm trying to look at, like, double bottoms or triple bottoms and then see if I can consistently do that. And if I can consistently do that with 50 shares, you know, make a $1 to $3 move, well, then I'll scale up to 100 shares. And if I can do that, then I'll do 200. And if I can do that, then maybe I'll use some margin and do 500.
But
I'm not in a hurry. So right now I'm like, I'm going to just consistently see if I can make, you know, $50 to $100 each time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best thing, you know, when you're trying a new strategy or learning something, you just kind of, you know, start to dip your toe in and, you know, work your way into it, you know, so you're comfortable.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, this is a great time to pause for a commercial break.
Irrational exuberance? When it comes to killer wine at drastically low prices, 30 to 70% off retail and free shipping, we live for that here at Last Bottle Wines. Whether you went long or short on GameStop, you'll need a glass of something terrifically tasty, and we've got the goods. Last Bottle is a daily wine site based in Napa, California. One wine every day at Black Swan event prices, usually 30 to 70% off until, poof, it's gone. Whether you're a pound-the-table type, think ultra-crisp, quaffable Sauvignon Blanc, or a dividend aristocrat, Burgundy, or Napa Cab, there simply is no better place to buy wine on the web, and they always have free shipping. Last Bottle has a deal just for Penny Lane listeners. Use promo code PENNY10 to save 10% on your next order with Last Bottle. The code is good for one order and one order only.
All right, snacks, we're back. So,
Hello.
So you have been using your trading income to pay off your credit card debt.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of embarrassing how much credit debt I had accumulated, which, where do we start with this? Okay, so I guess we could do you want to backtrack how all this started?
I do.
Okay, so I'd mentioned my first year wasn't really profitable, right? And then I'd stacked some money from, I think I was working. Well, I mean, I was working, but I don't remember exactly how I got all the money, right? It's probably a little bit of work. I think I pulled a little bit from, you know, stimulus money. I think my first stimulus, I just like threw in the stock market and just set it on fire.
Sure.
Yeah.
And as then, one does.
Yeah, everybody does. You know. So yeah, I think it was like a combination of stimulus money, work, school money. And my first year, I was just like, at some point I got to think I had like 14 or 15K in my account, and I had a cash account, and I really was like not going anywhere. I didn't know what I was doing, and I just wasn't consistent. I was like slowly grinding down, if anything, right? And then I don't know, I'm trying to remember what prompted me, but I had the wild idea of adding more money to my account. So I did that. And I used student loan money, more student loan money. I'm like, well, this is money that I don't have to pay back for a long time. And there's no interest right now, right?
Uh-huh.
So I got my account above 25K. And I started finally making money because I kind of was doing what I do now, just kind of like a hyper scalping kind of method, right? And I was kind of making a little bit of money. And I ended up adding a little bit more. Right.
Mm-hmm.
To have a more cushion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so then I ended up having like a little bit above 30K. And then I don't know what clicked, but I guess I felt more confident because I was further away from, you know, the dreaded 25K.
Yeah.
Like being right, being like so close. And I started making money. And that was 2021. And I was doing pretty well. And, I actually fixed my credit. I did fix my credit because that money was from student loans. My credit was just, you know, it wasn't great. And yeah. I had moved to Colorado and like, you know, I bought a new car, which is kind of a mistake in hindsight. Then I blew up my account. November, because I just was like going through different things and I kind of was like, I've always kind of like, when I was younger, I had a kind of drug problems. And then, like, I don't know. It kind of like.
We love people with drug problems. We love people with drug problems. Oh, my favorite.
I'm home.
Drug problems. Yes.
Yeah.
We love a drug problem. We've got nut butter. My,
oh my God.
Fave. We got Palmer. We're
has
laying
been on
with
here?
Drug problems. Booch is not yet, but God, Booch.
I'm throwing him under the bus.
Booch is actively in a drug problem. Just kidding, Booch. Just kidding.
Oh my God.
You know, but, Booch watches every episode. He's going to be like,
he's like, what the heck? What the heck? I'm going to do some drugs while watching this.
I say it with love and respect, Booch.
I mean, I did see him drink beer out of a shoe once.
Yeah, yeah.
That's normal, though.
He did the shoey, whatever they call it.
I used to call it a shoey. So you had some drug problems. We love
had
that.
Had some drug problems,
we love that. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so I, well, I ended up blowing up my account.
Uh-huh.
And
during, wait. This was like last year. These are recent drug problems?
It's been ongoing. I think just
okay.
And being in Denver,
there's weed. There's tons
There's also a lot of cocaine.
Hella cocaine in Denver. Okay. All right. We're in the cocaine. We're in the weed. We're in Denver. Now I've attached myself to this story.
This episode is not family friendly.
No. Okay. So you got in the cocaine. Cocaine's an expensive habit. I don't know. I've never done it. But I did have an Adderall problem.
Oh yeah. So we'll get to my Adderall problem. That's later in the progression of snacks.
Okay. Okay. Buckle up.
So I pretty much ruined my whole account in like a span of a week. I just got super like emotional and just like, I don't even remember what the first loss was, right? But I ended up like taking another loss, and then I started like, instead of trading like trash penny stocks like I've always done, I started trading like random shit people were playing in voice, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then I ended up taking my account from like 38K to like, I think like 20K in like a week or so. So that was great.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And it was pretty wild. And then so...
Were you using any drugs to take away the pain of losing your 18... Is that $18,000
a week? Good chunk. Okay. The only good thing about blowing up then, which sucks... is that it happened in November, mm-hmm. and that if it happened in January, I would have owed on all that money I'd made. So my tax bill was like, I was okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was like the silver lining, I guess, even though I'm not glad I blew up. But I ended up putting, I ended up taking out more money to like put into my account to get me back above 25K, right? And then I kind of was like doing okay a little bit again and getting back to like, doing better, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And then January, I just started really focusing in it, kind of. And I made a little bit of money. And then February happened, and I did the exact same thing. I had, like, a day where I just, like, I took one loss. Sorry.
I had to sneeze. I muted
the microphone. I know. I'm laughing.
Yeah, but the sneeze. Keep on with the sneezing. You all right?
Yeah.
No, I took a loss, and then I just like, and that's when I was like started taking Adderall. I'd been taking Adderall for the past few months, kind of like thinking it was going to give me like an edge trading. Like,
yeah, no, I can see how your mind could go down that as a like, Adderall addict. I can see.
Right, you think he'd be all focused.
No, it made me. I don't want to say that the first. I'd have to double check when I started taking Adderall. I think it was more of a combination of just life stress and drugs and just everything. Right?
Sure.
The first time, but I know the second time I was definitely doing Adderall, and like I even got a script for it. It's that easy to get an Adderall script, right? You just say you have, you know, all these problems, and they'll just give you a script. And anyway, I felt like it made me focus to an extent, but you're just high.
Yeah, you know were you like I mean? Doing that thing where you're like I did a lot of like chewing my own like mat. Sorry, that might.
Well, I was sweating so much. I'd have to change my shirt while trading because I was like. Sweating that profusely, right?
But also it just like feels so good. Oh God, we're coming just now. I got an alert on my phone that we released the Sound Trading Psychology interview just now, so it's public information. But I did so much Adderall in college that I developed like a pretty severe heart problem that I'm still dealing with. And I like have I have PTSD from the damage that I did to my heart from taking the Adderall. Because I just couldn't. I just really liked being focused. And I'm sure you can tell. Whenever I tell people. Well, most people assume that I've had some kind of cocaine problem in my life. Because I'm just so like. And I'm like, no, I never got into the cocaine. I had an Adderall problem. And they're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I could never try cocaine because I did know in my mind, like, you're going to like it so much. Like, it would, you know, I never would.
That's why I never did heroin when I was younger. Because I was, when I was, so I used to be really heavy in, like, the club scene. Right.
Clurb. We call it the clurb.
The clurb. The clurb. Yeah, the clurb scene.
Yeah.
And I was, like, strung out when I was younger. I was, like, strung out on ketamine. I used to do ketamine like every day. Every day. I was like strung out on it because I used to sell it and I used to sell Molly. So I was like, I would do ketamine like people smoke cigarettes, right? I would just do it all day. I would drive around hustling, doing ketamine. And
how,
like,
does one consume ketamine?
You put it in your nose.
So
some people actually
it?
Shoot it. I never shot it, but some,
like,
people.
Molly,
I would
snort
it.
It's different. You're. Molly, you don't snort.
Yeah, you
could.
Yeah.
You do. Whew. I'm not super into the drug scene, but so I don't know things. I don't know things
like
this.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, yeah, I'm about to microdose. I'm about to get big into the drug scene.
That's okay.
Okay, so you're high on the ketamine, you're selling the Molly, you're cruising around in your car. I'm there with you. Gotcha.
Right next to me.
Yeah, I'm feeling.
You're holding the gun. The throwaway. You're gonna hold the throwaway.
Sure.
The cops pull us over. I'll be like, I don't even know this chick. This is her car.
This is her car. That's her ketamine. Yeah. All right. So, wait. Why do we get into the ketamine? You're selling the ketamine.
I think we backpedal. Why do we backpedal? Because we're talking about...
Don't you also have some fairly severe health issues?
I have a ton of health problems, yeah.
Yeah, like a life-changing one?
Yeah, so at the end of 20... I want to say it was 28, 7, 20... I'm like, time is going by so fast now. It was a few years ago, before COVID. I like woke up on Christmas Eve, I believe. And I like couldn't use the bathroom. I'm like, well, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. And I like went to urgent care and they like didn't really know what to do, gave me some antibiotics, said I had a staph infection, but they like sent me home with like an indwelling catheter, which is super fantastic, not really. And then that night I like fell out. I couldn't walk, and the girl I was dating at the time, like, you know, call 911. I had a fever as well. I go to the hospital and I like couldn't move my legs anymore. And they did like an MRI and they were like, you have inflammation in your brain and your spine. You know, they said it was encephalitis, is what they called it. They also called it transverse myelitis. They've called it a few different things, but they said something just randomly caused my immune system to attack itself. And I just, in like one day, I was completely bedbound and paralyzed below my chest. And I was in the hospital like 5 weeks. And I actually wasn't doing drugs then, like before that. I was like sober and I had started going to the gym, which was like good because then, you know, getting from my bed to my wheelchair, I had arm strength, right? Which was really helpful. But I was in the hospital like 4 or 5 weeks and just had to kind of, you know, just accept that situation. And they didn't know if I would ever walk again. You know, my mom's like, oh yeah, you're gonna walk again. I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna walk again. I don't want to like psych myself up like I'm gonna walk again and then I don't walk again and then I'm fucked and just emotionally like devastated, right? But I'll take anything like a bonus, you know. But then like one day I just started slowly getting movement, like, you know, like I could barely move my leg, barely. But then I just started doing that every day, right? And then I could like barely move my toe, like how, like, you know, Kill Bill, where she's like, just move your toe,
wiggle the toe.
My friends were like sending me memes, like Kill Bill memes all the time, just wiggle your toe. I'm like, oh yeah. But like, so then I slowly started getting movement back. But then my left leg, I had no movement, so I'm like, well, maybe I'll just have like one leg, I don't know, fuck it. And then, so by then I left the hospital and having that little bit of movement on my right leg was kind of helpful because then I could like kind of move my leg, just barely, which would help me like pull pants on just a little bit, It like it made all the world, right? And then all of a sudden I could like barely move my left foot. And then I just was like, holy shit. And, you know, I was in therapy, outpatient therapy. At first it was like home therapy. And I just kept pushing myself and, you know, started coming back, you know, and I was like really kind of stupid, like, oh yeah, I'm going to record myself trying to stand and like fall down. You know what I mean? And like post it on social media. But I had a bunch of other health problems with it. Like I still do. Like I have no bladder function anymore. So I have to like use a catheter everywhere, which is great, but it's whatever. You know what I mean? Like I'm not going to bitch about what I can't control.
Wait, do you have to cath yourself? Like,
yeah.
Yep.
But I'm just used to it. Like if I go to the bar, which I don't do often anyway, I just take some in my bag or my pocket. You know what I mean? Like I've still gone to like festivals and like, you know, when I went to Denver, I kind of fell back into a drug phase, like I had mentioned. Mm-hmm. But like I was trying to live like a good life still, like have fun, you know. And I would say like when I was wheelchair bound, that was kind of a big part of me like getting better. I started going to shows in a wheelchair. You know, you talked about microdosing. I actually microdosed and had some like really positive times while in a wheelchair, kind of like reflecting that life's okay. You know, I'm not dead.
Right.
And then while I was in the hospital, you know, I see people that are never going to walk, gunshot victims, or, you know, people that have like, you know, quadriplegic. I was considered paraplegic, you know, even though it was coming back. But I don't know. I was always just grateful. It could be worse. And the thing is, it could get worse. And I have no idea. You know, I could regress. They don't know. More than likely not. But if it happens, it happens. You know, I'll just make the best out of life.
So you were sober and then you got encephalitis and you couldn't walk and then used drugs after.
Well, I mean, I'd obviously had my own problems with drugs prior and had gone through stages in my life.
Uh-huh.
But I know while I was wheelchair bound, there was a few times, you know, I started going out and like doing drugs a little bit, but it wasn't like heavy, like in a sense, dependent use. Like, I mean, I don't know. It was more like, going out with my friends occasionally doing drugs. Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is different of like being by yourself and doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Right. Or doing cocaine every day. You know, there's a difference of like every once in a while you kind of use at a show. I mean, people can have their own beliefs, but if that's
you
good
know,
or not.
My husband has seen Phish, the band with a PH. Don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, they're like the Grateful Dead, but new.
They're like the Grateful Dead, but new. He's seen them like 175 times, which is a lot.
So your husband does acid. Pretty much.
I have never said that on the podcast. It's not for me to disclose, but he likes Phish a lot, and so we like traveled the country to see Phish. And one year Phish does every New Year's a 4-night run at Madison Square Garden, which we've been to a lot of times. And one of the nights our seats were in the handicap section, and I don't even think we had seats, just like our tickets were in the handicap section. This is getting down a road that I don't really, there's something called Cash or Trade that's like an insular Phish community where you can like navigate your tickets around. And the only tickets Jimmy could get to the show were in the handicap section. So we were there and we were in the handicap section and those people were raging. Like the handicap section raged, and they were like on a lot of drugs, and like it was a thing. So, you know, my side of my brain that has not been to a bajillion shows is like, you were like sick and in a wheelchair, and you were and then the side of my face that's seen it, I'm like, yeah, that's a thing. So I hear you. Yeah.
Man, I'm going to come across as like this drug addict. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think that that's how this story is reading, because we're gonna wrap it up. I was just thinking how like honored I was that you felt comfortable telling this story and being as honest as you are.
It's not even the whole story.
Keep going.
But it's a great testament of, you know, persistence, yeah. And you know, a lot of what you, you know, going through all this, of course, probably reflected in your journey as a trader, not yeah. giving up and just, you know, keep on moving forward and you know, it's the same thing in trading as in life. And you know, obviously you're having success in it now, and you know, all these steps were the building blocks to bring you to this, you know, moment now where you're kicking butt. So.
Yeah. Not resilience. I would say resilience has been a cornerstone in my life, you know, from all that and from trading, and I don't really know how else to do it.
Yeah.
Just surviving, you know,
surviving.
No matter what.
I was talking to Trump's Sound Trading Psychology about Bofa was on that interview with me, and I was talking about the closeness I feel with my trading friends is like so it's deeper. It's, I mean, I have great friends in real life, but there's a thing with like Shark is one of my best trading friends in Bofo and Jason Spadafora, and people that when I call them, they answer the phone, and it feels very like you're in a resilient situation or a like a thing that pushes you so hard that there's a bond and kind of like a PTSD in trading.
Yeah. No, trauma bond.
Yes. Kind of. Yes. I think with those friends. Yeah.
I get it. I don't even really talk to a lot of really, I mean, it's interesting because of COVID and I've moved twice, you know?
Yes.
But like where I grew up, I mean, I don't talk to that many people anymore. And then in Denver, my best friend lives there still. And like recently he kind of came near where I was at, and I drove to Cincinnati. We got drinks, right? But like a lot of my friends now are like online, which is interesting. You know? And like on Twitter or, you know, on Discord. Like it's interesting how technology is.
Totally. Totally. Well, okay, wait. We sort of lost the vein here on how you accumulated the credit card debt. Because you said you blew up your account.
Well, so I blew up the account. I took on more debt, mm-hmm. right? And added more money to the account.
Did you take out a loan on your credit cards?
I took out a loan.
Oh, a loan.
A shitty loan, like one of the shittiest loans you can get. Because I was like, at that stage, I was like, I know what I'm doing. I just have to focus.
Yes.
I know what I was like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I did that. And, I got back above PDT.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then I kind of was like back and forth still. So that, you know, that happened November. And, around when I blew up, I'd had like this bullshit driving job before I blew up, right? And I was getting kind of like, I was doing fairly well trading before I blew up, where I was getting a little too cocky, like, oh, I don't need this job. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know? And, well, I was still making like just $2,000 a month with like a bullshit little job, which I realized is such a different, is a life changer, right? Just mentally, it was so different, because if I was like doing poorly trading, well, it didn't matter. My rent was still covered and my car payment was still covered.
Yeah.
You know? Well, now I had that extra pressure. Like, I have to do well.
Yeah.
Right? I have to do good. Well, so then I kind of was like not really caring about work anymore, to the point where I wasn't really working that much. I ended up getting fired, right? Because I just wasn't like caring.
Yeah.
So then around then, you know, I would say like maybe a week or two later is when I blew up, or like maybe a month later I blew up. I'd have to double check, but it was soon after that. You know, and then I blew up. I tried to like then kind of get back into the groove, which I kind of was getting back into the groove, but not really. And then I was in the process of like thinking if I was going to move out of Denver to be around family. And I was also thinking like, well, it'll be cheaper because Denver is so expensive. And my family had mentioned like, you know, if you help out with your grandfather who has Alzheimer's, you know, you could probably
live in a place for... I remember this. Yeah. You ask. Yes. Yeah. I remember.
So then that was like kind of, there was different ways of looking at it. I was like, for one, I'll be around my family, which I haven't really been around this side of my family. They're all Russian, right? So I was
And there's the Russian art. I've seen photos.
He's a painter. He's a really well-known painter.
Really?
I'll send you some stuff.
I mean, I'm a painter. I appreciate a painting.
So I ended up visiting family, and then that kind of like took some of the... I was thinking like, you know, maybe that'll help, you know, I'll be able to move, I'll be around family, you know, my uncle has a bunch of properties, maybe I'll be able to learn about how to like get into real estate from him, you know, that's what he does, he like flips properties and manages properties, and then I'll be able to help out with my grandfather, which will be cool. Maybe I could learn Russian fluently, even though I understand it really well, but fluently. And
Привет.
Здравствуйте.
There you go.
Except people hate Russia now, which I get. They kind of... anyway, it's a whole other thing. I mean, I was like, you know, it'd be good to move. You know, I would actually be able to get out of Denver. I wouldn't be around all this drug use. You know, I mean, you should be able to still not be able to do drugs to be around drugs. But I was like, I felt like it was kind of setting me back. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to, like, be a loner, like, have my own place because they were letting me stay in one of their properties for free. Mm-hmm. And then I could just, like, focus on myself and trade and not worry about, like, having people over with my friends, which is great. I'm not going to knock on my friends. But it was, like, distracting, you mm-hmm. know, and it was kind of distracting. And so I went back and forth and ended up kind of doing really well trading in January. Right after all those losses, and I started like keeping track like more of everything, but I was still on Adderall, kind of getting like that false confidence, like this is how I should be thinking, right? But I was like in a sense too reactive, like I'm already like a hyper scalper, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every day, but it like made that worse, you know what I mean? Then if I took a loss instead of like... I mean, I'll still revenge trade sometimes, but I've gotten much better not doing so, right? But with Adderall, it was like 0 to 100. You know what I mean? It was hard. I was like, I gotta make this back, you know, and just like it was a mess, to be honest. And I would say I was doing fairly well trading pennies. But I was also starting to do other things. Like I started doing earnings plays, which I realized I'm pretty good at trading earnings, large caps. If they're like, if it's like bad earnings and they went up too much, you know what I mean? Or the opposite, and like, you know, shorting it or long or whatever. I started doing okay on some of them. But then I like got overconfident thinking I could trade all large caps with size because I started trading because I did okay on a few of them, right?
Yeah.
So then I like traded a firm when a firm dumped, and I like bought 500 shares, and then it dumped like $8. So I was down $4,000 in like 2 minutes on a halt, which is fantastic.
Well, they're all a lot cheaper now. So now they're easier to play. $30 or something.
Yeah.
It used to be 70.
But I don't know, like, you've seen it, Blaine, like where I posted my February. We're just like red. It's just losses. It's just all these huge losses.
Yeah.
And it's just because that month I was just an emotional wreck. I had like one day where I made like $1,500. And the next day I was like overconfident and lost like $3,000.
Yeah.
And then I kind of like scalped some pennies for a few days, made like four, you know, a few hundred dollars each day. And then I got back into like a large cap, made like $1,000. And then I lost $3,000.
Yeah.
So at the end of the month, my account for, you know, the year to date, what I had made was down like negative $8,000 on the year. And I'd crashed my account back to like 18, like just under 19,000. I was like devastated. But in that time frame of that month, I was so close to 25K again that I kept pulling out cash advances and being like, oh, this is the last time.
Okay.
Just like frantic, just frantic.
Yeah.
I was just frantic. Just,
so that's
you know
how
I mean?
We got the credit card debt. God, the number of times that I was at 25,000 and would dip below it and then would like scramble to find
scramble.
Like $200
and then lose it.
And then I'd like want it, I'd have to be in by 8. So you could trade the next day. It, like
a trade station cuts off trading immediately.
It's like, immediately. Oh, well, Thinkorswim didn't. So like there's, you could kind of like try to YOLO and get back. I mean, it was like, like it was just.
It was bad.
Horrible. Horrible. And like, I wasn't telling my husband. I was just like, and I kind of like sabotaged my own art career a little bit in that time. Cause I would like, kind of like hawk a painting for like $3,000. And then I needed that money for the rent of my studio, but I would like,
third
like
the
I have $3,000,
account.
Like I can like get back over.
Yeah.
It was just, I was just like self. Yeah. Whoo.
Yeah.
Just switch like so much stress. Switching to the cash account. Like I'm not over PDT right now, but I'm also like IDGAF because like it is what it is. Like it's,
yeah.
We can take that thing to zero. If we do, it's okay. But there's no more of that fiending, like,
yeah.
I got, you know.
Well, so the last day I blew up, and again, that whole month was just a mess, right? And again, my account ended up being negative 8,000 on the year. That's how poorly I traded, how emotional. But that last day, I think I took, like, on one of the normal shitty penny stocks I scalp, I took, like, a ZOM. And I took like, I don't know what I did. I normally don't trade. I trade pre-market, but I don't trade with size, right? So I just obviously learned a lot that month, which has made me a better trader now. But I took like a $700 loss where I shouldn't have. I think it was like $300. And then I don't know. It ended up being $700. And then I was like, oh, I'll take this other trade, this other penny stock that I never trade. And I lost like $300 because, you know, some of these stocks are so thin, they'll fall like nothing, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't know what you're doing. And I was just emotional. So then I lost like another $300. So I'm down like 1,000 or whatever it was. And then I just like lost my mind. And like, I think Indo was running that day and Husa and all those like low float oilers. And then I just started trying each one. And these aren't even stocks that I trade normally. And I had, like, no edge. Like, I feel like I have an edge playing pennies. I know what I'm doing. I feel comfortable. I can put on a lot of size, and I just feel comfortable. But I was just, like, this emotional wreck. Like, I got to make back the $1,000. So then I took, like, a $700 loss, right? And then I'm, like, in my mind, frantic. And then I'm, like, I'll take another one. And then I end up taking another loss. And I ended up getting the account back to 25, like falling below 25 again that day. And oh, this is a mess. So I ended up doing a deposit into my account, right, from my bank account of like $5,000 to be like, okay, I'll have this much cushion above PDT again.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it'll have an instant.
It's all about the cushion.
It'll be instant, right? It'll be instant.
Incremental.
But I didn't even have $5,000 in my bank account. I was just like so frantic and just so lost that day.
Yep.
That I was like, oh, I'm going to make it. I got this. This is fine, right? This is fine. And then, so then I got that much above PDT again, so my account wouldn't be palted. And I literally lost all that again. So I lost $7,000 and was still under like I ended up being at like just under 19,000 in my account that day. I lost like $7,000. Just going from trade to trade to trade, just like a disaster. Just like, it's like hard to even reflect on. That's how manic I was. You know, yeah. I would say the Adderall was definitely a big part of it. And I was just an emotional wreck. I'll be quite honest, I was. So yeah. I destroyed my account and I was just like devastated. I didn't really know what I was going to do with my life anymore. Because I'm like, I've taken all this debt thinking like I got it this time. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. You know, and I was like, maybe I'll just finally learn how to use a cash account. Maybe I'll do that. And luckily, taxes were about to happen, right? So about a week later, in the span of that day, I ended up being able to get like a tax return and some more money. And I funded my account one last time with like $7,000. Got to exactly $25,000 in like $100 or whatever it was. And I don't know, I just focused. I got off Adderall and I just started trading pennies and did nothing else for the most part. It was like 99% penny stocks scalping. And I've literally only had like 2 red days since. And this was, I blew up that second time at the end of February. And I always say on Twitter that I refocused March 4th. And in that time I moved. So I moved, right? I stopped doing obviously cocaine. I got off Adderall. I moved, was around family, and I just refocused. And I've only had 2 red days since, and those red days were like minimal.
That's great.
Amazing.
That's quite a.
And I think so now my debt is almost, it's not all gone, but it's almost all gone. It's almost to the point of where I was with debt before I even took on debt to fund the account.
Yeah. Which is, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, I still have student loan debt, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. But I'm going to figure out something.
Different.
I'm going to figure a plan out for that. But I think I've made like, as of today, I've made almost $70,000 in like 3.5 months. That's by literally just focusing on what I know and just not bag holding anything, not trying my best to not be emotional and just doing that. It's been, I don't know. It's hard to even think about. It's just completely different trading.
Yeah. So. That's, you know, you, a lot of times you have to go through that, you know, and I'm sure as all of us, you know, traded have been to those points where you just have those days that, you know, bring you down to your knees and you have to make the decision on if you're going to change something or not. And everyone's breaking point is, you know, can be so different.
I'd recommend nobody do any of that. Don't take on.
Yeah.
obviously don't take on debt thinking, you know what I mean? It was very, very risky.
Yeah. Oh God. It's brought up a lot of like emotions. It's just so, it's like almost like a carnal, that might not be the right word, but like, it's such a desperate, like, it's like,
it's like fight or flight.
Yeah. It's so, it's just, carnal.
Carnal.
Oh my God. Well, we have gone way over the time. I could not stop listening. I want to thank you. I don't think anyone since, I mean, honestly, at Love and Addict, right? Like, I love the Peanut episode was just life changing. And Carrie Palmer, I could just. Well, this has been amazing. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I have to cut you off, but I do because I have to go to an Alison Krauss concert. These things are very important.
You're going to go microdose?
Not yet, but I do think it's in my future. Apparently,
I think it's okay.
It unlocks another level of creativity, and I like that about myself. So
I'm happy doing nothing now. I just like, I think my biggest thing now is I drink a lot of coffee, and I like being as clear-headed as I can be. I feel like that's probably the best for me because I have like the addict kind of mentality where it's You know what I mean? I'm balls to the wall, so it's better for me to do less drugs.
I feel that. Stay away from that coffee, though. You might get the eye twitch. Right, Shark? All right, this has been awesome. I wish you nothing but the best. I hope when you come back for part two that you're totally out of debt, like next week.
I hope so.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah,
I don't hope so, but it's going to happen.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being so open with your story. It's really, amazing to just hear such openness and just there's a lot of inspiration to be taken from it.
For sure. Don't take on debt.
I'm going to go open up a credit card. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Everyone.
By accessing this podcast, you acknowledge that the Penny Lane podcast makes no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in this podcast. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional or financial advice. Unless specifically stated otherwise, the Penny Lane podcast does not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. The third-party materials or content of any third-party site referenced in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the opinions, standards, or policies of the Penny Lane podcast. The Penny Lane podcast assumes no responsibility or liability for the accuracy or completeness of the content contained in third-party materials or on third-party sites referenced in this podcast, or the compliance with applicable laws of such materials and/or links referenced herein.